It's Jeff Levering for Pella Windows and Doors of Wisconsin. Check out that effortless horizontal window slide and the best lifetime warranties in the industry. Order by April 30th and get 0% for 48 months at PellaWI.com.
Certain restrictions apply.
Live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios at The Avenue, it's the Jeff Wagner Show. Come join the conversation on the Old National Bank Talk and Text Line at 855-616-1620. Old National Bank, get old. Now, filling in for Jeff Wagner, here's Tracy Johnson.
Good afternoon, Wisconsin. Great to be with you today. I'm Tracy Johnson, filling in for Jeff Wagner on this election day in Wisconsin. Also a great Tuesday during Holy Week 2023 and a big news day. And I understand that I have the best laid plans here for a 3-hour show, but I have a feeling this may be uprooted by some breaking news. So we are going to proceed not with caution, but with confidence. So I'm here with producer Charlie. And again, for those who don't know me, I'm Tracy Johnson. My day job, I serve as the president and CEO for the Commercial Association of Realtors. I am a mom of two young boys, a wife, a runner, a Marquette Golden Eagle, and a lifelong Wisconsinite. I filled in for Steve Scafidi when he's out and will join him quite often when we talk about business policy and real estate news from time to time. I invite you to be part of the show on the Old National Bank talk and text line, 1-855-616-1620. Again, we'll be following breaking news related to President Trump's indictment and arraignment, as we're expecting to have some news throughout the show. We'll also be keeping our eye on the weather, which I've heard could wreak some havoc on southeastern Wisconsin. And of course, as mentioned, today is Election Day. It's the spring election, which has always been said to be a lower turnout election, but absentee ballot requests are breaking records, and the lines at the polls I'm hearing are very long and busy. Wisconsin has about 3.5 million registered voters, and from what I'm hearing, at least what the woman at my polling place told me on Friday, when I early voted, she said that 25% of the registered voters had already voted early absentee or by mail. And Eric had referred to some numbers about 400,000 early absentee ballots requested. I mean, this is a huge number, and this is going to break records in lots of ways today on Election Day in Wisconsin. This, of course, is a nonpartisan election, which you couldn't tell by listening to some of the ads. But it's a very important statewide race is on the ballot. All right, now it feels like a show. I'm Tracy Johnson, in for Jeff Wagner on WTMJ. We're continuing to follow the breaking news out of New York as former President Donald Trump is in the courthouse right now awaiting arraignment. There are no cameras allowed in the courthouse, so we might have a quiet period here for a while, but we expect that we'll break in as those events unfold throughout the afternoon. Just a quick comment on that is, you know, to think about all the things that are happening in our world today and the amount of attention something like this is receiving, it just really is shocking. I'm sitting here in a studio and there are four televisions, all different stations, and they have this ongoing streaming coverage of this event. And as Eric and I were talking about earlier, just think about what this looks like to the rest of the world. You've got people on one side supporting the president and people on the other side who are just can't even look at him, and they're protesting, and it's just such a crazy time in this country and this world. And again, we will continue to follow this throughout the day, but getting back to the show, there are so many other things, like I mentioned, happening in this world, and we're going to talk about them on today's show, anywhere from what's happening in New York City with Amazon. I mean, speaking of a crazy city, Amazon, as we learned a year ago, have formed an employee union, and they are struggling now to get that off the ground. Of course, it's Election Day, and we are going to have some guests on the show who are running in these important elections. Former Justice Dan Kelly will be joining us at the 1 o'clock hour, and Senate candidate Dan Canoto will also be joining on this very,
very busy election day. But I want to turn to a local story. And yesterday, Governor Tony Evers signed into law a much celebrated piece of legislation. And it's a celebrated piece of legislation that targets an issue that we talk, or Jeff talks about a lot on this show, and I know is very, very important to me and to many of the listeners. This law would allow for the towing of vehicles in certain circumstances in which the owner is involved in reckless driving. So this would be a state law that local municipalities, including Milwaukee, the driving reckless driving capital of the world, could, of Wisconsin, I should say, could enact and enforce. This is an effort to put stricter laws on the books to make people feel safer in their communities. In 2022, in Milwaukee, almost 500 reckless driving citations were given out, and this is up from 375 in 2021. And 2023 is on pace to break all of these records. This driving is leading to death and mayhem in our communities. People don't want to come downtown in some cases. They don't want to live in these communities. So Representative Bob Donovan, who was recently elected in Greenfield after serving on the Milwaukee Common Council, co-sponsored this legislation that passed into law in bipartisan fashion. You always want those bipartisan laws. And when you have a Republican co-sponsored piece of legislation signed into law by a Democratic governor, you know this is good legislation. So again, this would allow the municipalities to tow and impound vehicles whose owners had reckless driving citations. So is this going to work to curb reckless driving in Milwaukee? Our number is 855-616-1620 on the old National Bank talk and text line. Or is this just another law that could go on the books and do nothing? Because we talk about a lot the issue with enforcement. So you can have all the laws you want on the books, but it's the enforcement of those laws. Representative Donovan says, today a strong message is being sent to those that blatantly disobey our traffic laws, threatening the public. The law must be followed or you will lose your vehicle. But is this going to work? Does this matter to the people who are driving recklessly in the city or in the state for that matter? This is a statewide issue. The Wisconsin Department of Transportation said about 2,900 people are injured in reckless driving crashes every year in the state. And last year, 119 people were killed by reckless drivers in Wisconsin. So will this work? Will this work to curb reckless driving in Milwaukee? Will people finally feel safer again? Our number is 855-616-1620 on the old National Bank talk and text line. We'll discuss when we come back. I'm Tracy Johnson, in for Jeff on WTMJ. Welcome back on WTMJ. Our number once again on the old National Bank talk and text line is 855-616-1620. And we're taking your calls on the latest piece of legislation, actually the first bill that Governor Tony Evers has signed into law during his second term. And it is a piece of bipartisan legislation that is meant to curb reckless driving in our cities. It would allow municipalities to develop laws to tow vehicles that belong to those with reckless driving violations. So is this really going to work? From the 414, hi, Tracy. I'm curious how the city will handle stolen cars. Right? Stolen cars. So if the owner of a car with a reckless driving ticket has their vehicle impounded, yeah, that's going to stop them. But aren't there stolen cars all over the place and people driving recklessly? I'm struggling to see how this works, how this actually works. Dan in Campbellsport, you're in WTMJ. What do you think?
Well, I got two things that I want to talk about. I go down to Pfizer Forum for the basketball game. And when you're driving through Highway 100 to get down there, and I believe it's, or 145 it is, I think. Anyways, wow, the people that drive past you is just, they're going crazy. And they blow red lights. They don't even see them red lights anymore. It's amazing how that happens.
So if these owners...
And then,
okay.
go ahead. Anyway, then back on when I drive through down to Chicago and then through Indiana and back into Lower Michigan, you know, me and my son, we bet on other drivers how many is going to smoke past us at 100 miles an hour or more than we are going. And we 7 to 10, we called.
Wow.
Anyways.
Dan, thanks for the call. I think you bring up a good point. I mean, this is a serious problem in our city, and it's causing people to not want to live here. It's causing people to not want to come downtown. And, you know, as Dan stated, you just know that this is going to happen. You know that when you're driving down the expressway or you're coming downtown that you are going to be confronted. Because even if these people are getting tickets, these police officers are putting their lives on the line to even pull these cars over. So you have to have a pretty credible idea. You have to have a good idea on, is this person going to pull over, or is this going to be a situation where I'm putting my life on the line? But this reckless driving legislation, where municipalities and police can tow cars and impound these vehicles, is this going to work to curb reckless driving in our state? Kenesha from Milwaukee, you're on WTMJ.
Hi. I don't think that'll work. I think that there needs to be stricter laws because most of them are people who steal in cars. So if the car gets towed, you know, it's no biggie to them because they'll just go steal another car. As well, there's some people who will register cars for them. They have friends. They can drive their cars. You know, I've seen it firsthand where somebody will drive somebody else's car and tear it up, and they don't care. You know, they'll use their girlfriends to buy them cars or whatever. So, no, that just is not enough.
But is this a start, though? I mean, is this at least an acknowledgement that we have to do something? And then dealing with the stolen cars, is that maybe a next phase of legislation that can be introduced?
Yeah, but it needs to happen fast because there's too many lives that has already been lost.
Yes. Thank you, Kenesha. You know, I think she makes a really good point, and a lot of the texters are chiming in. You know, this is about stolen cars, really, in so many ways. But I do applaud the bipartisan effort to really try to continue to bring to light. And WTMJ, Charles Benson and his team have done a phenomenal job of covering this issue, and hopefully the education and awareness can continue to put pressure on legislators to come up with solutions that can be acceptable across the partisan spectrum. Because at the end of the day, this is a problem that needs to be solved. We'll wrap on this when we come back. I'm Tracy Johnson, in for Jeff on WTMJ.
Sure.
Welcome back on WTMJ. Tracy Johnson, in for Jeff Wagner on this Tuesday afternoon, this election day in Wisconsin. Also a crazy weather day and Trump arraignment day, which we're following breaking news out of New York, so we may dip in from time to time. But right now, a state issue, a recent piece of legislation actually signed into law yesterday by Governor Tony Evers in an attempt to curb reckless driving in our state. And really specifically, when I think about this, it's in our city. Now, this legislation would allow for municipalities to create laws to tow vehicles of owners with reckless driving tickets. But will this work, or is this just scratching the surface? Brian from Milwaukee, you're on WTMJ.
Yes, how you doing? Thanks for taking my call.
Great.
If this is enforced, I'm all for it, because I witnessed a lot of bad things. I mean, one of the reasons I'm a safe driver, for obvious reasons, you don't want to hurt nobody. And if you drive recklessly, what will go up? Your insurance will go up. So, you know, I drive safe. I do everything by the book. And what makes me upset is, like, in certain areas, like West Dallas, Brookfield. I was in West Dallas driving one time. This guy hit me in the back, just banged into me. He had no license, no insurance. And when the cops came, they just let him go. And I was like, he had no license and insurance, and you're just going to let him go? Yeah. So I was like, it's ridiculous. In my opinion, he should have been stopped. He was intoxicated, by the way, stopped and taken his car away. But they and then his answer to me was, everybody in West Dallas drives without insurance and license. And well, I was like, oh, okay.
But Brian, just like...
So if they enforce this, I'm all for it.
Yeah, thank you so much for the call. And Brian, it just is so many of these laws on the books. So Brian, who called in, said he is a law-abiding citizen. He has his insurance. He has his license. He was not driving intoxicated like the person who hit him. He's following the law, right? And if you have law-abiding citizens following the law, that's great. It's almost as if those aren't really who the laws were designed for. It's the reckless drivers, the out-of-control drivers who are creating this mayhem. And I would go a step further. And I'm sure that this is part of the 2.0 of this legislation. How do we deal with these stolen vehicles? And how do we take the weapon, aka the cars, away from these people? But I think we are beyond putting rules on the books, especially with so many vehicles that are being stolen. And many of these citations are issued to unlicensed drivers and kids, for that matter. And we have a system that continues to push these lawbreakers out onto the street. And I think we need to do more to fix access, like I said, to the weapons, aka the cars. And we need to fix the people. And we're going to need to do a lot more with our commitment to reforming the individuals, or just like gun laws or smoking bans, we're just pushing the problem, hypothetically and literally, down the road. After the news, we're going to be joined by former Supreme Court Justice for the state of Wisconsin, Dan Kelly. He is running an election, this Supreme Court spring election. I'm going to ask him some questions that I haven't heard asked on the airwaves. You are not going to want to miss this. I am Tracy Johnson, in for Jeff Wagner on WTMJ. It's 12:58.
Live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios at The Avenue, it's the Jeff Wagner Show. Now, filling in for Jeff Wagner, here's Tracy Johnson.
Welcome back, Wisconsin. I am Tracy Johnson, in for Jeff Wagner. On this Tuesday, this election Tuesday in Wisconsin, usually this is said to be a low turnout election, but we are seeing returns, absentee returns, like no other. I was mentioning earlier, I was in the polling place early voting on Friday, because who knows what would happen today. And they said 25% of the registered voters in my municipality had already voted. And I've heard that the activity is there. There's a lot of activity at the polls right now. So I work in an industry, commercial real estate, where the Supreme Court really matters. So we work as an industry with the legislature. We work with the legislature to pass meaningful and mostly bipartisan legislation to be signed into law. And we rely on a court that will uphold these laws, which is why I am very glad to welcome today a gentleman that I believe will make a great Supreme Court justice for the state of Wisconsin, former Supreme Court Justice Kelly. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Tracy. I really appreciate this. It's great to talk with you.
Yeah, and you and I have, we go way, way back to days of Milwaukee Forum. So I am just so proud to see the work that you've done and all that you've done for our state. And it's such an honor to talk to you today. So you are on the ground, and you were on the ground yesterday all over the state. What is the mood as you are on the ground today?
Well I think it's really, really hopeful, really excited. So what I hear everywhere I go, and it's so reassuring to me, is that people still treasure their liberties, they treasure their Constitution, because they know that that's the protection for those liberties. And so everywhere I go, I hear, you know, that people want a jurist on the court, not a politician. So the decision before us by 8 p.m. today is whether we're going to have the rule of law or the rule of Janet. So the rule of law, pretty simple. We just take our directions from the Constitution. We do what we're commanded by the people of Wisconsin. Rule of Janet is her putting herself above the law. She's made it plain that if she's elected, she plans to put her thumb on the scales of justice to make sure cases come out according to her political agenda. And I think that folks across Wisconsin are going to reject that out of hand, because they still want their liberties protected by their Constitution. They don't want just whatever Janet and three of her friends in a Madison courtroom might decide they can have.
Dan, are you finding as you talk to voters that they've already voted? Has the message to early vote, get it out of the way, has that taken hold with the conservatives and the Republicans in the state of Wisconsin?
I think it's growing. There are all across the state, there have been so many people that have told us, they come out during rallies and meetings, and they've told us they've already voted. They're already out there supporting. And now they're working on getting others to come to the polls. And so I think that the turnout in early vote is going to be probably higher than it normally is, especially for a spring election. And I think that's reassuring because a whole lot of things can happen on election day. And you never know what it's going to be. You know, a foot of snow in northern Wisconsin, that's always a possibility. A work emergency, a family emergency, whatever, that might keep you away from voting. So helping people understand the importance of getting your vote locked in as soon as you can, I think is just top notch. We got to continue focusing on that for future elections, but I think that it's starting to get across, and we've seen that performance in this cycle.
Well, and there's so much at stake. As you mentioned, the polls close at 8 o'clock today. So if you didn't early vote, you still have time today. Dan, as you're out and about, what has surprised you the most about this campaign? Is it the spending? Is it the enthusiasm? Is it the types of rhetoric being placed on the different candidates? Talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, there's a lot of that has surprised me. So let's start with the spending and the national attention. So it is now clearly the most expensive judicial race in the history of the entire country, and that by a large, large margin. And I think that there's a reason for that. This is the first judicial race of which I'm aware of in which one of the candidates has openly campaigned on setting herself above the law. You know, our entire system of government rests on the proposition that there is no one above the law, especially those who serve in government. And yet my opponent has promised in advance that she's going to declare her independence from the Constitution, from the law, and from the people of Wisconsin if she gets elected. And she's just going to implement her personal political agenda. That's brand new in judicial campaigns. And I think that's what's attracting attention from across the country. Because if that works in Wisconsin, I think there are those who would pick that up and use it as a template to move courts in other states in a more activist and political direction. So I think folks are looking to see what the good people of Wisconsin have to say about this brand new and dangerous form of campaigning in a dangerous notion that would eventually rob us of the rule of law and our constitutional protections.
Yeah, it was stunning to me looking through some of the fundraising reports to see all of the out-of-state money, Steven Spielberg, Kate Capshaw, Hollywood elites are weighing in on this election. And I keep thinking, why do they want to interfere? And why are they trying to purchase this election for a national agenda? So speaking of that, you know, one word that I have used to describe you has been a person of integrity. Integrity seems to be a theme for your campaign. There have been lots of opportunities to go after your opponent on some of the personal issues and other things, but you've chosen to really rise above that. Talk about why integrity is so important to your campaign and to the campaign and work of any Supreme Court justice.
Yeah, and I think, thank you for that. This has everything to do not only with me as a person, but more importantly, the work of the court. So, you know, Hamilton said 235 years ago that the court has neither the power of the purse nor the sword, but merely judgment. And judgment for its effectiveness depends on the integrity of the person rendering that judgment. And so I think that the role of a Supreme Court justice requires great personal integrity. And so as I look at this race, and I've heard allegations about Janet, and there have been people who have strongly urged me to talk about those because they believe that it would have an effect on the election. I've refused because I don't believe that that is an appropriate thing for a judicial candidate to do. You know, the work of the court depends on us being really careful about what is true and what is not true, and being punctiliously accurate in our analyses and in our judgment. And I think that you don't, that's not something you just put on and take off as the occasion demands. You either have that or you don't. And so because my intention is to serve the people of Wisconsin well on their Supreme Court, you have to have that integrity from start to finish. And there's no way that just to win a seat on the court, I'm not going to relax those standards. I'm not going to traffic in allegations that I don't know to be true. Maybe they are, maybe they aren't, but that's not for me to decide, and certainly not for me to bring up in the middle of a campaign. I think that would be, a terrible thing to do. Now, unfortunately, my opponent doesn't feel the same. She doesn't wait for allegations. She just makes things up. So one of the things that I've learned through this process is that running statewide means that you get to wake up every morning to learn something brand new about yourself that just isn't true. And it's just been, you know, in some ways it's kind of amusing because the desperation that evidences is plain and palpable. But at the same time, it's infuriating. Because, you know, my dad, when I was growing up, he taught me the importance of your name, of your character, and maintaining that good name. And, you know, in running this race, I've had to deal with a serial liar who's had tens of millions of dollars with which to just make stuff up about me and try to spread that around the state in an effort to win herself a seat on the Supreme Court. And I think it's disgusting.
Well, and as somebody who's known you personally for, I would say, decades now, I know that you know, that is really hard to deal with when, you know, a lot of these things aren't true. So two final questions. For those who did wait until today to cast their ballot, why should they vote today before 8 p.m.? What is on the line here?
It's the whole ball of wax. It's whether we're going to continue to live under the rule of law or instead trade that all in for the rule of Janet. Now, I remember, because I'm a bit of a student of history, what it took to secure our liberties way back to the beginning. And Tracy, you'll remember if you read all the way down through the Declaration of Independence, down to that last line, before everyone signed their names, they said that they pledged their lives, their fortunes, and their sacred honor. And many of them, they lost that. They died. They were convicted of treason by the British. They were bankrupted. But they did not count that a price too high to pay to secure those liberties. So today, we don't have to do that to continue to secure our liberties. We do have something we have to do. But we don't have to risk our lives. We don't have to sacrifice our fortunes. We don't have to lay down our sacred honor. All we need to do is vote. And that's and that's a simple thing, and I'm a little concerned that because the cost of doing that is so small, just get up and go, vote. Yeah. It's a small cost, but maybe people will value it a little. And I think that would be just a terrible, terrible mistake. And here's the way I look at it. You know, all the authority and power in the state of Wisconsin to create and maintain governments belongs to we, the people. And all the power to decide who sits in the seats created by their constitution belongs to we, the people. And that's an enormous amount of power. Now, Tracy, I've learned from Spider-Man movies that with great power comes great responsibility. Mm-hmm. And so there's all that power. Now here comes the responsibility to do something about it, to spend that small cost that it takes to secure our liberties by coming out to vote. And I think that if we do that, if we get a bunch of friends together that might not ordinarily vote in spring elections, then we're going to be just fine. Because I do think that people across the state of Wisconsin do continue to cherish their constitution and the liberties that it protects. And so we can secure that simply by standing up, going to vote, and letting everyone across the nation hear what Wisconsin thinks about the constitutional order and their liberties. And I'm confident that if we do that, then this is going to be a very successful day. If we don't, well, then we have to start getting used to an entirely different form of government in which a lawyer and three of her friends from a Madison courtroom dictates to us what laws we can and cannot have and what liberties we may and may not enjoy. So I don't want that to happen. I don't want to be the generation that drops the ball on 175 years of Wisconsin constitutional heritage. So, and I'm, like I said, as I go around Wisconsin, I'm confident that the our fellow Wisconsinites still treasure this enough to stand up and protect it.
Supreme Court Justice candidate Dan Kelly, one final question. Tomorrow is a new day, right? And you're going to wake up tomorrow and the election results will have been counted. What are you going to do tomorrow?
I'm going to rest.
Rest.
I have. I don't think I've slept for the last 2 weeks. At least that's the way it feels. It's been great going around the state and meeting so many different folks. I mean, the last few weeks, you know, we hyperbolically had the goal of meeting every single Wisconsinite. I think that came close. We just were out and about a whole lot. And, you know, this is one of the parts about the campaign that I just absolutely love is getting to talk to so many folks who care about their state, care about the direction of the courts, care about the rule of law. And that's just been an absolute joy, being able to spend this last several weeks with them. And it's been an incredible encouragement to me as well.
Supreme Court Justice candidate Dan Kelly, thank you so much for your time. Good luck today. My prayers, my thoughts, and my hope is with you as we complete this Election Day 2023.
Thank you so much, Tracy. It's always great to talk with you. Thanks so much for having me on the show.
Thank you. When we come back, a little more about the election and some of these campaign finance numbers. I'm Tracy Johnson in for Jeff Wagner on WTMJ. Welcome back on WTMJ. I'm Tracy Johnson filling in for Jeff Wagner. Big thanks to Supreme Court Justice candidate Dan Kelly for joining. I know that we have some people texting in, and thank you so much for that. This is a show where we get to talk about the things that I have planned. And I know that there are some people who prefer the opponent, and I appreciate that. I am not having Janet Protasiewicz on the show, so if you are waiting for her interview, you can turn the dial, but I don't encourage you to do that. This is a very important and expensive election, $45 million flowing in from across the country. And voters, I want you to think about this. Do you want this election to be bought by people who don't live here? Think about what is their interest in motivating you to vote. Is it your interest as a resident of the state of Wisconsin? I sure hope that people will do their homework and think about how this really works, the role of a Supreme Court justice, not to create laws, but to enforce the laws. I work in the trenches every day with legislators who create laws. They create the laws. The Supreme Court justices uphold those laws. So I appreciate everybody who does their homework on this. I have certainly done mine. We have one more break, and afterwards we'll wrap this and lead in. I'm Tracy Johnson on WTMJ. Welcome back. Great to be with you today on this Tuesday. I'm Tracy Johnson in for Jeff Wagner. I'm really excited about this next segment, and I think it's going to hit close to home for many of you. And I understand that this audience, just like any audience, is likely split on those who have college degrees and those who may not. And right now, half of Americans have those college degrees, 53% across the United States, which doesn't count those who may have attended college but not finished. So I would say a majority of people can connect with having made the decision to, you know, go to college, or sometimes you finish, sometimes you don't. But over the past several years, with rising tuition costs and changes in the job market, and even some people questioning what's being taught in schools as it pertains to opportunities in the job market, there has been a healthier dose of skepticism around the value of a college degree. A recent Wall Street Journal poll actually found, it was a nonpartisan research organization, found that 56% of Americans think that earning a four-year degree is a bad bet, compared to 42% who retain faith in the credential. And the skepticism is strongest among people ages 18 to 34, and people with college degrees are among those whose opinions have soared the most. And I'm reading from the article here. So there seems to be a shift in the way that people are really thinking about the value of a college degree. And in 2013, 53% of Americans were bullish on college when 40% were not. So that this is eroding over time. So experts are suggesting that perhaps the fact that there is so much cost associated and the debt, the student debt, is one reason that people are losing faith in the degree. Others are suggesting that it's just impossible to get the classes with so many liberal arts degrees that you kind of have to spend a lot of time just taking classes to catch up. And so a lot of people aren't graduating. So what is the value of a college degree now? Public skepticism towards higher education began to rise after 2008 and the recession, which was then compounded, of course, during the pandemic. Enrollment in U.S. colleges declined by over 15% over the last decade, while growth in alternative credentials, which is a very important factor, alternative credentials, apprenticeships, these things have increased sharply. And this was another interesting find, that the value of a college degree, like skepticism, was greatest among Republicans and people living in those rural areas. So is this really something that colleges should be paying attention to? Is the value of a college degree the same as what it used to be? When I was in college or high school, I'm a Gen Xer, right smack dab in the middle of Gen X, that's just what you did. Is you applied to four or five colleges, and this is just what you did, and you needed a college degree. But it's so different now. The cost is so much higher. And we just saw a 5% increase for state of Wisconsin schools. And the debt and the uncertainty associated with, are these people going to be able to find a job? So is the value of a college degree what it used to be? Our number is 855-616-1620 on the Old National Bank talk and text line. You know, and what's driving this? I think that colleges need to pay attention. They need to pay attention to what people are saying about the value. I mean, they continue to raise money and pour money into these capital projects, build these beautiful new buildings, upgrade for technology. But when the enrollment is declining at the rates that we've seen and the continued skepticism, and now add on to the fact that you've got a whole group of people, not a generation quite, but a whole group of people who haven't been paying their loans for a couple of years because of the COVID pause on student loan forgiveness. You know, that could all be coming to a head. And that is going to propel even further the skepticism around a college degree. So is a college degree really worth what it used to be? 855-616-1620 on the Old National Bank talk and text line. You know, I'm an employer, and I'm not sure I pay attention to that anymore. I don't know. I feel like the sands are shifting, and especially if you can go to college for a couple of years, and then if you know, decide to pause. I know a lot of people who have gone and then changed their major. They need to take a couple of years to gather the funds so they can go back, get some experience. And all of these things disconnect people from that education experience. So is the value of a college degree what it used to be? 855-616-1620 on the Old National Bank talk and text line. Your reaction, my response when we come back. I'm Tracy Johnson in for Jeff Wagner on WTMJ. Is the value of a college degree what it used to be? 855-616-1620 on the Old National Bank talk and text line. This is a hot topic. We may have to revisit this for later in the week, really citing a recent poll that suggested people are losing their faith in the college degree. More than half of people surveyed said it's just not worth what it used to be. And texters are suggesting you know, with the cost of college double what it was in 2000, you know, how can people afford to do this? So is it valuable? Perhaps you need that piece of paper to get a job, but what is the return? What's the return long term? And are these jobs that people are getting degrees for going to even exist in the future? We talk about AI and the fact that AI will replace so many of these jobs in the future. What does this really mean? So we have some callers. Connie in Portage, you're on WTMJ. What do you think? Connie in Portage, you're on WTMJ. Oh, let's go to Craig in Horicon. You're on WTMJ.
Hey, Tracy. I was just saying that because, yeah, Charlie kind of indicated I was a Connie. And I'm not a Connie. I'm a Craig from Horicon.
You're Craig?
I'm retired now, Tracy, but I worked a company, and I'm retired now. But I worked, most of my counterparts were either from Mexico or from Canada. And I'll be honest, I worked in the greatest business in the world, which was adult drinks, you know, Kahlua and Canadian clubs. So
all right.
That'll give you a Mexico and Canadian thing. But they were all college graduates, and they were all engineering students, you know, or engineering graduates. And they made fun of Americans that, oh, well, you know, what's your degree? And I was like, business. And they're like, well, that's not really a degree, is it?
Mm.
And it was kind of hilarious. But, I was going to say, does it really matter? No, I've had some of the brightest people working underneath me that, you know, just barely made it through high school, but they were the best employees in the world, the smartest, had some of the brightest ideas. I think it's where you're from, because I do believe America is so great in producing brilliant people from experience. I don't know if that's the case in other places, but you know, other countries do place a great deal of emphasis on education.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's one way of looking at it. However, does it matter? I would say in the great scheme of things, experience is the greatest teacher in the world, Tracy.
Yeah.
He's so glad to hear you there for Jeff, and you have a great week, Tracy.
Thanks, Craig. I mean, what a great caller. Craig, you can call in anytime. You know, I think he makes a really good point talking about internationally, how folks, across the globe have very specific degrees tied to their jobs, right? And the fact that in America, we have such a focus and such an emphasis on the college degree. And I would argue that I think that piece of paper is what is needed for many jobs, and it has to do with the economy and what is the supply and demand for workers at the time. In a really tight labor market, perhaps it doesn't matter anymore, but following a recession or in times like right now when we see so many of the tech companies shedding workers, perhaps the tides will turn, and perhaps that's what this survey is suggesting. Let's go to Connie in Portage. Take two. You're on WTMJ.
Hi. I think we need to have the college education. I really do. Mm-hmm. My oldest son is a fishery biologist. How could you be a fishery biologist without a degree in that?
Mm-hmm.
I have five children, all went to college. They all have fantastic jobs, big incomes. I don't know what their father wanted them to go to, a little school somewhere where they could learn to do machinery, different things like that. And I didn't want them to, because you have to know what you want when you're 18 to go to those schools.
Mm-hmm.
And most of the time at 18, you don't know what you want to do. And I called one of my professors, and he said, send your child at least 2 years to college. Then that's an experience in itself. In the second or third year, they'll know what they want to do. And it worked out fine for my children. I just believe in education totally.
Yeah. Well, Connie, you said you have a son who's went to school to be a marine biologist. Is Is your son
not a marine? No, a fishery biologist, not a marine biologist.
So is he working in that
fishery
field?
Biologist?
Is he working?
He
in
was
that field?
In the Mississippi. He's retired now, but he was on the Mississippi River for 25 years.
And that's fantastic. Go ahead.
Yes, that's what he did for until he retired.
Yeah, and I think Connie makes a really good point about at least experiencing college. I mean, the college experience isn't just something that people say. It is a real thing. It's about learning that mm-hmm. independence. It's about having exposure to people from all different places and then discovering what you really want to do with your career. And also in the context of understanding what the job opportunities are for the future and being able to pair that with your interests and with your passion. Connie, thanks for the call. James on the South
sure.
Side. James on the South Side, you're on WTMJ.
Yeah, don't you feel that you should work for your college degree, not have what Joe Biden wants to do, the government bail you out paying for your college education, and then maybe you only go a little bit of the time and you waste everybody else's money and stuff, where when you were growing up and everybody else was growing up, that you work for an education, maybe got scholarships and everything else, and it was more meaningful, not now where you're asking for some bailout by the government yeah. or some other which way to float your college yeah. education and stuff like that, further education type of stuff.
Yeah. And James, I think that your sentiment is shared by a lot of people who may have made a different decision. And I certainly think there needs to be some reconciliation between being able to make a decision about moving forward in a career and being a part of a society. Because I agree with you. I don't think that college loans should be forgiven. I've said this before on the show, and I know that we have a series of court decisions coming up in the next couple of months that will secure the fate of that. But, I think we need to have an equitable solution for people who decide to pursue that education and for it not to harm the people who don't make that choice. James, thanks for the call. But at the end of the day, I think this is a shifting time. Not only is the job market shifting, employers' needs are shifting, and frankly, students are shifting, and especially in a time and day and age when the cost is such a factor and there's so much uncertainty around college debt. I think we have a ton of great callers, a ton of great texters who make really fantastic points about the value of education, because college education is important and it's part of our country. It's part of our future. It's part of why we are such an innovative place, but it's not a one-size-fits-all solution. We'll have more when we come back. I'm Tracy Johnson on WTMJ. Welcome back on WTMJ. I am Tracy Johnson in for Jeff Wagner on this Tuesday afternoon. Lots of great discussion on, the value of a college degree. Stick around in the 2:30 half hour. We'll also be talking a little bit more about jobs and employment and the future of the workforce. This is an issue near and dear to my home and to my heart. But right now, the news is next. And when we come back, we'll talk about Brewer season, man, sports season in Wisconsin. I'm Tracy, and for Jeff.
Live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios at The Avenue, it's the Jeff Wagner Show. Now filling in for Jeff Wagner, here's Tracy Johnson.
Welcome back, Wisconsin. It's great to be here in the studio. This time just flies. It flies when you're having fun and when you're in the middle of all this breaking news with the weather and the arraignment of former President Donald Trump and on Election Day. It's a great feeling, and there's a great group of people here who are delivering the news. And speaking of which, not breaking news, but also today is the day that playoff tickets for the Bucks go on sale. They have secured the opportunity to play the first two games, which are yet to be announced, at the Fiserv Forum. So because of their seeding, number one seed, they we'll be watching the Bucks, and so you can buy those tickets today. But it's such a great season in Wisconsin with the Bucks and the Brewers. You have NFL talk. Who knows what's going to happen with Aaron Rodgers? The NCAA tournament just concluded. You know, and it's just a really great time to be a Wisconsin sports fan. And I want to talk a little bit about the Bucks and just the experience of being in the game. They have at the game, they have a few opportunities left this year in the regular season. Tonight they play away at the Wizards, and then they're back in town tomorrow against the Bulls, and then Friday against the Grizzlies. And if you haven't taken the opportunity to come downtown and go to the Fiserv Forum, I encourage you to do so. And I don't know if Giannis is playing. I don't know who's on the starting lineup, but I have a feeling that they are going to play their very best, and they are going to deliver the very best show for the fans of Wisconsin. I was so fortunate. I took my son to the game on Sunday against the 76ers. He wanted to see Joel Embiid, PJ Tucker, James Harden. He wanted to see the game and see them in action. Although he, of course, was cheering for the Bucks. But these guys put on such a show. And it was almost to the point where I thought even the 76ers players were having a blast playing against the Bucks. I mean, they were so fun to watch. And I think you can see a lot of that on your television if you watch from home. But just being there, you realize that the fans in the stands are so important to how the Bucks are playing. And, you know, I have seen this team over the last couple of years. I used to be a season ticket holder, but just because of time constraints and just the sheer cost, I've not been able to do it. But I've watched this team grow and develop, and the fans and the ownership and how they've really integrated with Wisconsin. And it is just a sight to behold. If you haven't had the opportunity to get down there this year, I encourage you to do so. Every single one of these players has a story, and it's so interesting to see their personalities come out. I think the Bucks ownership and the marketing team has done a fabulous job of really showcasing that through the fan engagement. It's just really, really phenomenal. We're so lucky to have this team in Wisconsin. And as someone who worked on the arena development through kind of the Park East development and working with the team and trying to make sure that the team stayed here, I think we are all seeing the results, the economic benefit of having this team here and having the national, international spotlight right here on Milwaukee. And to see the further development, you see the Trade Hotel opening, I believe the end of May, which is going to be a premier NBA hotel. I was talking to one of the sales folks over there. She said that there is an NBA floor with 14-foot ceilings. So this hotel, which is located right across the street from the Fiserv Forum, is going to be where the visiting players will stay when they're playing the Bucks. And they've designed this specifically for the Bucks players, which I think is so cool. And I think there's still more to be seen from this development. There's still more to be seen of this team, and to realize that we have history in the making right here in Wisconsin. So those playoff tickets are on sale today. We don't know the dates, of course, as of yet. I think they're going to announce that later this week. I'm Tracy Johnson, in for Jeff Wagner on WTMJ. Coming up next, although this is a nonpartisan election that we have going on in Wisconsin today, there is one partisan race on the ticket, and we will be talking to candidate Dan Knodel when we come back. It's 2:16 on WTMJ. Tracy Johnson in for Jeff Wagner. On this Tuesday, Election Day in Wisconsin, we have the opportunity to talk to a couple of the candidates who are out on the trail. Obviously, as we've talked about, this is a nonpartisan election. However, there is a special election on the ballot, and we're joined today by Dan Knodel, candidate for Senate District Number 8, which happens to be my district, covering Milwaukee, Ozaukee, and Washington counties. The seat was vacated earlier this year by Senator Alberta Darling. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Tracy, and your part of Mequon will play a very important part in this election today.
Yeah, so what are you hearing on the ground? I know you're busy knocking on doors.
Well, me and my campaign team will be shopping for new shoes.
Okay.
In the very near future. We have burned up some shoe leather, but we have received a very positive and recently a very motivated constituency that is, I think, getting to the polls, and that's the key.
Well, and you represent a very, I would say, diverse area in terms of political leanings. You've got some bluer and purple and bright red areas. What are the issues that they care about across the entire district?
Well, we definitely go from deep red to the west to a more blue to the east of this district. And as you mentioned, Senator Alberta Darling's Senate district for many years. And what the constituents there have experience with her is that she was open and would listen and would act to constituents' concerns. And I think I've been that same arena. She and I have done 20 plus bills together and successfully with three different governors, Governor Doyle, Governor Walker, and now Governor Evers. So they're appreciate somebody who can be accomplish things no matter who the governor is, and work across the aisle when necessary, as necessary, to govern.
So any specific issues that voters are coming to you with, or is it generally kind of the sense of you need to figure out a way to work together because we need to move forward?
Yeah, that would when what I've heard on the doors the most was to work together.
Mm-hmm.
Currently, the inflationary pressures are tremendous on people, and that goes to tax reform. The inflationary pressures come more from Washington, but we can ease the tax burden here to help people with their budgets. And education, always a top item, and then crime, especially as this Senate district is near city of Milwaukee. That crime factor, we know it, we hear it in the news all the time, is a growing and disturbing problem, and it has to be addressed.
So you've been in elected office for more than 20 years now as a assembly representative, and so you're familiar with the halls of the Capitol, you're familiar with the caucuses, you're familiar with the people and the players. What do you think is the greatest opportunity as a state in the upcoming budget cycle? As we know, the legislature, Joint Finance, is going to be in town tomorrow hearing from different constituencies about the matters to be put forth in this budget. Where can we come together to actually put something productive on the table?
Well, politics is the art of the possible,
mm-hmm.
and I'll be there tomorrow for a while at that public hearing, and we do need to listen what people's main concerns are, but we're going to be successful as we have been the last two budget cycles to put together a prudent, sound fiscal document that the governor can sign, and he has signed the last two budgets, so it's a bipartisan effort at the end of that day. And I expect we'll see accomplishments in tax reform.
Mm-hmm.
We will see additional dollars invested in our communities, particularly for infrastructure, roads, et cetera. Education, we fully expect that protecting school choice and keeping that program solid and growing has to be accomplished. So there may be there's got to be some back and forth. There's going to be some compromise. But I think we get those things accomplished.
Well, and you've proven in the legislature that it can be done. Last session, the last budget that Governor Evers put forth was basically rewritten and approved. And it did include some of those tax reforms, which we really, really hope to see again. So on the ballot today, in addition to this election, there are a number of constitutional amendments. Which one is most important to you, or how do you see some of these playing out and resonating with the voters?
Mm-hmm. Well, the bail reform amendments are very important, and this will help us to place some accountability upon the judges. We know that particularly Milwaukee County, the circuit court judges and prosecutors really have not done their job well with setting low bails and soft sentencing. So this will at least address the bail portion of that, that they've got to take this person's past criminal history, their current and present danger to the community, into their decision-making when setting bail. So that's why it's so important to make it a constitutional amendment that judges must follow this. And then that gives us accountability to oversee that the judges are doing just that. So very important to address this crime situation. The welfare to work is simply, I think, a matter of reinforcing that that's is the way our system had been, going back to Tommy Thompson's welfare to work efforts, that people need to be making the effort, these are childless adults that are collecting some unemployment benefits, but they're able to go to work, and they need to do just that.
So you've run a number of campaigns throughout your career. Is there anything that stands out to you about this time around? In fact, you ran just last year for your assembly seat, but has anything surprised you as we go into the spring election?
Sure. Well, to be a one issue, as the Democrats want to make it a one issue, being abortion, and I've been really surprised and quite saddened that the Democrat Party candidates will not even recognize that there's two lives that need to be taken into consideration. And I think both lives can be protected with our law, and that takes time through the legislative process, and I hope not through the courts. So, but to not even recognize that there's two lives has been very saddening to me. And then the out-of-state presence and dollars that have come in to try to buy these elections. And my candidate, opponent, has about 70% of contributions coming from out-of-state. And that shows you where her... who she'll be supporting or who she's got to respond to versus Wisconsin residents in the 8th Senate District.
Well, and it's certainly to really hear from the voters and to realize and recognize, and as you do, as someone who has who works in the building, there is an interest in moving forward and talking about compromise and how we move forward. Final question, Dan, any last words for the voters in Senate District 8 or voters throughout the state?
Well, please do get to the polls. This is it. This is the opportunity for people to make their voices heard, and I think we're seeing that. So I hope through the rest of the day that will get done. In my particular case, I'm going to be the one on the ballot that has the accomplishments, have shown and proven I can work both sides of the aisle with whoever the governor might be and get things accomplished for the betterment of all the people of the state of Wisconsin, particularly the 8th Senate District. So everybody out there, get on out to the polls and make democracy work.
Great. Dan Canoto, candidate for Senate District 8. Election is today. The polls close at 8 p.m. Good luck to you, sir. We'll be watching. We'll be listening. And then you can hopefully get some new shoes. That's on your agenda tomorrow, right?
That's correct. On Wisconsin.
All right. When we come back, we'll wrap on election and talk a little bit more about those constitutional amendments that are on the ballot today. I am Tracy Johnson, in for Jeff Wagner on WTMJ. I feel like we can let that one ride. Welcome back. Great to be with you. Filling in for Jeff Wagner, I am Tracy Johnson. In our final half hour of today's show, little Huey Lewis. Love it, love it, love it. All right, in the final segment of today's show, we're going to discuss the progress that has and has not been made related to the Amazon Labor Union, which shocked the world last April. In fact, I think I was actually in the studio when this was all going down a year ago. So the workers in New York, at a New York warehouse, Amazon warehouse, successfully formed the first U.S. union in the e-commerce giant's history. So, I mean, Amazon is the biggest company, right? Thousands and thousands and thousands of employees. Well, they don't have a union. of Amazon workers, and they're not affiliated with unions outside of the company. So in April, they formed the Amazon Labor Union. They call themselves the ALU. And the president of the union is the guy is a guy by the name of Chris Smalls. And if you recall, he was a former employee that was fired by Amazon in the early days of the pandemic and became quickly identified as a kind of a disgruntled employee and received a ton of attention, went to the White House, took a lot of shots at Jeff Bezos, of course, as being an out-of-touch CEO, saying, okay, Jeff Bezos is going to the moon and investing in his space program, or while us normal people are all here on Earth working in this warehouse. But Chris and his kind of gang of union organizers has been struggling right now to get Amazon to the bargaining table, to even develop a contract. And this is at the same time that they're trying to organize several other Amazon warehouses in the New York area. So they're really struggling to make any ground here, because in order to have a contract, you need two people, two entities to come to the table. And Amazon is refusing to do that. They're recognizing that this idea, this union that this Chris Smalls and a group of people had put together and concocted really has no standing. And there's infighting between some of the grassroots organizers. And for those who don't know, this structure is unique in the fact that many unions are formed by connecting and affiliating with unions outside of the entity that is trying to bring in the union. And so it was actually kind of a not the best place to start for these organizers, because they really didn't have any clout to begin with. So they aren't able to think out this bargaining strategy, and they really don't have much leverage. And Amazon is basically ignoring them. And in the end, I actually think this fizzles out. This effort that was celebrated by some, but I think a lot of people were kind of looking at this and saying, you know, what does this mean for unions in some of these larger organizations and some of these larger companies that hadn't traditionally had them? And I think this fizzles out for a number of reasons. Not only was this disorganized, but Amazon as a company has always prided itself really in paying above market wages, very competitive wages to keep people there. Now, I can't speak to the work environment and the work conditions, but, you know, as an employer, they certainly are trying to go to market and pay what the workers are worth. I also think that warehouse workers are not the future for the global economy with the introduction of artificial intelligence and automation. And these individuals who were part of the labor union, I just don't think are really long for this world in terms of their value to the company. Because these companies and these organizations who face this resistance from workers are going to find another way to do it, whether it's through technology or automation. I mean, certainly they want to work with the workers to make sure that they're keeping folks intact. But when they encounter that resistance, they have to find another way. So I think in the past couple of years, when we had such tight labor conditions, we saw the employees really having a lot of power at the table, figuratively and literally at the table. But I think we're starting to see that pendulum swinging back, whether we like it or not, to the employer and being able to make some of those demands fairly or unfairly. 855-616-1620 on the old National Bank talk and text line. Amazon doesn't need to come to the table, and they won't come to the table, just like a lot of these companies who were short-staffed for way too long and figured out a way to survive. That productivity is now realized through that automation. Is that what we're seeing going forward? Who has the power in this relationship? Is it the employees or the employers? 855-616-1620. 1620 on the old National Bank talk and text line. There's also an option C. And we'll talk about that when we come back. I'm Tracy Johnson, in for Jeff Wagner on WTMJ. Welcome back on WTMJ. It is 247, almost 247. We're following a lot of breaking news today at the station. But talking through an issue that really came to light about a year ago, an Amazon facility in New York, as they were attempting to be the first Amazon facility to unionize. And, you know, it's a fascinating story for me to watch. I started my career working with the labor unions. I spent some time working with the plumbing, mechanical, and sheet metal and air conditioning contractors association. So I have a deep appreciation for the process and the integrity of union workers and the unionization process. And so when I see these stories about a failed attempt at formation of a union and really an attempt that had very little groundwork except for a disgruntled employee trying to really attempt something that had no merit, it is frustrating because of all the other people that it tends to hurt across the company because of the organization's inability to effectively organize and effectively bargain for the needs and wants of those employees. But it really comes full circle to the question of, you know, are these types of workers in a warehouse really going to be the way of the future? And have these companies moved beyond the need for workers, whether they be union or not, to carry out the function of an Amazon facility? And in a day and age where artificial intelligence and technology and robots are really taking over these jobs, and the future of the job market has become fairly confusing, if that's the right word. It's not bleak, it's just confusing. Just the other day, I was talking to my cousin, who is a junior sophomore at Whitewater, and he was studying computer science, actuarial science, actually. And he told me that he was switching his major because the outlook for that type of degree in some of the computer and actuarial science field will be obsolete in just a few years, because a lot of these skills that can be learned can also be automated. And so, you know, as you have the introduction of artificial intelligence, you're seeing a lot of jobs really being phased out. Now, at the same time, there is good news, because these AI jobs are actually creating millions and millions of new jobs. And they're projecting that 97 million new jobs will be created by the year 2025. So Forbes Technology Council actually has looked into this, and they've named 15 different kind of career areas that will be most greatly affected by the introduction of AI, including insurance underwriting, warehouse and manufacturing jobs, customer service. We've all had that interaction with the customer service bots, research and data entry, long haul trucking. We've seen kind of driverless vehicles come to the forefront. And somewhat disconcertingly broad is the category titled any task that can be learned. So I think that's also kind of playing into young people and old people, middle-aged people, me, as we think about what is the security and the stability of our future employment and what is our kind of contribution to the workforce as we move forward. This study goes on to say that accountants, factory workers, truckers, paralegals, and radiologists, just to name a few, have been and will be confronted by this disruption in the next couple of years. So if you're working in a field right now, any of those fields, many fields, any field, healthcare, for example, with the introduction of telehealth, all of these things are being disrupted with the introduction of artificial intelligence. And I think it's a matter of evolution, but also out of necessity, as you have different groups of people and different generations interested in certain types of career fields and certain types of jobs as they're going through the workforce. I think this is just a fascinating topic to really delve into. The study does go on to say that industries that will always need humans, and this is, I love this, teachers. And I will do like a little asterisk side note. My cousin who said he's getting out of some of the computer science stuff said he wants to be a teacher. And I thought, that's great. You can't replace teachers. You can't replace writers and editors. You can't replace lawyers, social workers, certain medical professionals, therapists, and then those management professionals. But there is no doubt that all of these areas, all of these fields will continue to be disrupted as we move forward and as we move through kind of this evolution where workers are sometimes they're in high demand and sometimes they're not. I know, kind of tying into that whole idea of graduates, how are they looking at the world when so many of these jobs that were being created and these young people were going into at Amazon, Salesforce, Google, they're all being eliminated. All of these companies have had massive layoffs and have massive layoff plans moving forward as we face this uncertainty within our economy.